Savvy regards to staff of NMATA, as well as visitors and guests on the campus. This is the main professor recording on the 13th of June, 2019. And today I am happy to inaugurate Course 13, which is a vocation dedicated to the humanities. And what I'm offering with pride and pleasure in this talk and text is an introduction to the way that this vocation will develop on NMATA, so that I can familiarize you with the opportunities, the unique opportunities that I seek to provide through this vocation. Now, you'll find here on the landing page some text which is accessible to anyone who comes to the school and signs in as a guest, not merely exclusively to staff. And of course, there is the audio to go with the text, which you are listening to at this very moment. The text begins with a citation of two lines from the cantos of Ezra Pound. Milkweed the sustenance as to enter arcanum. At the outset, I strongly advise you to take into account what is the very great fact of the work and character of the American poet and teacher Ezra Pound. I'll have quite a bit to say about Ezra Pound in the humanities course, and it might be appropriate to designate him as the mascot or even the presiding mentor of the course, presiding out of the realm of the supernatural, which is where you go when you die. So there's Pound. I'll have a lot to say about him, and particularly about the Chinese connection through Pound. But as you look at this page, you'll see it begins with a sort of mandala from the 12th century illustrating the seven liberal arts, which is a theme of the humanities, and I'll get to that eventually. However, I would have you note that the first few paragraphs of the landing page begin on a rather different spin, which might not at first seem to be relevant to the humanities. I speak here about the fact, which is such a strong component in my own experience, that each of us, from childhood onward, is directed and guided by signals and signs that come to us through the fabric of aeonic dreaming. That is to say, actually through the tantra fabric of the dream weaving of Sophia herself. And I often refer back to events in my childhood or in my adolescence, as I may hear as well, not to indulge reminiscences, but to point out, to exemplify how important it is to realize that you have been provided from childhood with the guidance and direction that you require to find your correct path in life and to fulfill not only your life on individual terms, yourself as you are, the person you are, but also your life on transcendent and transpersonal terms. And that is such, and I guarantee you of that, and I stake my entire work on the veracity of that proposition. Repeat, I stake the value of my entire life work on the veracity of that proposition. So I open here in the first few paragraphs with the concept of the inborn guiding system or internal guiding system, which again is something of a navigational trope. Certainly it is a navigational trope. It's also a trope that refers to nautical experience, to sailing. A boat, a ship, a sailboat may have an internal guidance system. You, as a human animal, have an internal guidance system, IGS for short. So I write, according to the divinely originating design of the human psyche, each person is equipped to become self-guiding, self-directing. In the corollary to this assumption, I assert that activation and correct use of the IGS leads the individual to know and fulfill its unique endowment as a human creature, truly as the divine animal indicated or invoked by Nietzsche. The original clues that come through the time and setting of your personal life are provided for the activation of the IGS. Incoming signals alert and prime the system for lifelong use, as without, so within. Catch the signals and hold true to them, and your internal guidance system will come into operation as it is designed to do. So with that concept clearly established, I refer to my vision of the humanities, or you might say my vision of the humanities. It's a vision, it's a prospect, it's a possibility of how the humanities might be recovered and restored now and in the future. I'll have you know, by the way, if you don't know already, that the study of the humanities as part of the higher education or collegiate level of study in the Western world has been more or less totally obliterated, totally abolished. I don't think that you can even undertake a study in the humanities anymore. I think it has been banished from the university curricula. What you find instead is feminist studies, cultural Marxism under many different disguises, and in many cases not even disguised at all. The straightforward hype and inculcation of cultural Marxism and Marxist Zenosh ideology in the universities is rampant. Those programs, including the horror of the cancerous ideology of feminism, of multiculturalism, of moral relativism, all of that has replaced the teaching of the humanities. Now, let it be clear at the outset that I'm not an academic, as you know. I'm a college dropout. I did like maybe 4 months of university at the University of Maine in the winter of 1963 and 1964. I was there November of 63 when Kennedy was assassinated. I was in history class, ironically. And I am not proposing an academic project for the restoration of the humanities. No, not at all. I am not proposing a university-scale attempt to restore them. Such attempts do exist, as far as I can see. I mean, if you put the humanities into a search engine, you'll find that there are institutes and programs and individuals today who are indeed attempting to bring the humanities back into university curricula. But I'm not on that wavelength at all. I'm coming from an entirely different direction. So I want you to be clear that to appreciate, I like that word, to appreciate, for you to appreciate my vision of the humanities, you begin with the concept of the internal guidance system. which is an esoteric concept. It's a Gnostic and Gaian tantric notion entirely, coming out of the heart of my work. It's closely related to the notion of the moral sense, which I've been developing in connection with the English, with the British philosopher, English philosopher, Shaftesbury. And it's a faculty that needs to be investigated, first of all, to see if we even possess such a faculty, generically as human creatures. But secondly, then to find out, well, do you possess the moral sense? And what is the moral sense? And how would you know whether you have it or not? And the moral sense and the IGS, or internal guidance system, are really two names for the same faculty. The same faculty. Now, isn't it interesting, or do you find it interesting, that faculty is a colloquial term that you hear when you go to the university level? You don't hear it so much at the lower levels of education. You have your teachers and your headmasters. But in the university, you have the faculty, right? What is the faculty? Well, it's a generic term for the body of the teachers and professors who present the curricula at the university level. But I'm telling you that you have a faculty which surpasses anything that you can get from the faculty of the body of university learning. You have a faculty. And the cultivation of that faculty, the IGS, the inboard guidance system, coupled with the moral sense, is the an absolute heart and essence of what it means to be human, or to be, according to the delightful term of Nietzsche, the divine animal. So what do I present here in the opening paragraphs, and what is my intention in pitching the IGS to you as an overture into the subject of the humanities? Teaching of the humanities has the purpose to confirm and cultivate your internal guidance and enable you to achieve self-direction. The humanities provide a support system for self-development, a tool of facilitation. Additional to the directional signals coming from life itself, there is a rich field of values and insights to be encountered in the humanities. The purpose of studies in this field is to enrich and deepen your sense of humanitas, which is the moral and intellectual aspect of the anthropine species. You are born as a member of the human species, the anthropines. You are a specimen calibrated to a particular racial mix. But all that being so, there is no guarantee that you possess or will possess the actual status of humanitas. So how do you acquire the qualities and attributes of humanitas? The answer is the same for everyone. You grow these traits in the crucible of your soul or psyche by assimilation of certain nutrients, just as a plant grows. The nutrients come from life itself on the one hand, and then, in another way, from literacy, learning by the written word, oral discourse, including poetics, and dialectics, which is nothing but a fancy word for conversation. Okay? So, call these two opportunities life-based intuition and literacy. The signals that activate your IGS come from life experience itself in the form of omens, clues, dreams, encounters with people, places, and animals, elective affinities, as Goethe called them, and all manner of input that catches your attention in a striking and enduring way from your earliest years and builds your intuition into a reliable working tool, which is your moral compass. All this growth-inspiring input comes to you spontaneously as you travel the natural pathway of your life. And in addition, as I explain further on through the text, you go out and you deliberately seek to grow your intuition, to shape it. You go out and you deliberately seek those particular sources of inspiration which are specific to you. And that is self-education. That is the cultivation of the humanities. So I want to say, since I might get around to omitting it in the course of this talk, as I sometimes tend to do, I want to say explicitly, what is my vision for the development of Course 13, the vocation in the humanities? First of all, I'll tell you up front what it ain't. I'll tell you what it is not. It is not a return to the traditional study of the classics, the Greek and Latin classics. Traditionally, the humanities were founded in Western education upon the Greek and Latin classics. Some of you may know that the word Renaissance means a rebirth. So the Renaissance, which began, well, there was a preliminary phase in the 14th century, actually in Flanders. The Flemish Renaissance preceded the Germanic and Italian Renaissance, which is generally dated to the 15th century, say 1420 and onward. General understanding of the Renaissance is based on the very simple idea of the recovery and rebirth of what? What was the Renaissance the rebirth of? Well, it was the rebirth of the classical system of philosophy, learning, and ethics of the Greco-Latin traditions of the ancient world, of what is called antiquity. I love the word antiquity, but I'm not seeking to go back into antiquity, and I'm not proposing to anyone to resume the studies of the wisdom and culture of antiquity in order to recover the humanities. Absolutely not. You may have heard the wonderful phrase, I think Simon Signoret, who was the lifetime love and companion of Yves Montand, titled her autobiography, "Nostalgia Isn't What It Used to Be." Maybe you've heard this phrase. Well, certainly nostalgia isn't what it used to be. And the humanities aren't going to be what they used to be. If they survive, if they are recovered and restored, they are not going to be what they used to be. Get that right coming out of the gates. So I have a particular vision of what the humanities can be now going ahead from this moment. And I'll tell you, it's a really simple vision. The humanities will be the result of the education that is custom fitted to an individual who chooses to restore the humanities. My vision of Course 13, the vocation, is a program of mentoring, actually. I mean, this is how, I'm just going to give it to you straight. Now, whether I will be able, notice I don't say I will be able, whether I will be able to accomplish this or not, I don't know, but I'm going to lay as much groundwork as I can. Now, ideally, were I to carry forward this vocation, according to my vision, it would work like this. Those who undertake the vocation, one of the three, is the humanities, the GNE, and Celestics, Those who undertake this particular vocation, number 13, would contract with me for a certain fee for a mentoring program. Now, this mentoring program, I can picture it quite clearly, and it's a fast-track program. It would certainly be a 90-day commitment. The period of 90 days reminds me, somewhat humorously, but I assure you, with all due respect, to the cliche that could be heard and probably still can be heard in AA, ACA, Al-Anon, and in all those recovery programs. To be sober for 90 days was one of the primary goals of someone who came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, likewise, this mentoring program in the humanities would require that you be intellectually sober for 90 days. Mentally and intellectually sober. And to that end, I would offer in the program two sorts of material. There would be, over 90 days, six different conversations on Skype. In the first five conversations, I would consult with the individual one-on-one and advise him or her how exactly to construct your own education in the humanities. So, there's a vast array of subjects and directions one can go in exploring these humanities. For instance, you can go into the Chinese angle via Ezra Pound, of which I'll speak further. You could go into the American Transcendentalists. You could go back to Renaissance humanism and to Pico della Mirandola and the Oration on the Dignity of Man. You could go to the Russian humanists. You could go in all sorts of different directions. Now, no one's going to be able to go in all those directions, and so I envision this mentoring program as the opportunity for me to steer you in a certain direction that is compatible with your particular character and your particular interests. So that would be the purpose of the first five conversations, five recorded conversations, and then there would be text and some interchange of emails or whatever, and you would be required to create a notebook, a record of your interactions with me, a written record of your development over these 90 days. And then the sixth or final talk would be your dissertation to me in 40 to 50 minutes of your conception of how you are going to pursue the humanities along a line that is custom fitted to you, and thereby qualify yourself in turn as a mentor to others who would come into the program. So how do you like that? How do you like that picture? That's my conception, to the extent that the main professor would be available and would be able to undertake such 90-day commitments. Now, additionally, I want to say, and these are really important details, that this would not be cheap. And so in order to undertake a mentoring program in the humanities with me in person, there's a certain fee involved. The qualifications require that you have A, the disposition, B, the intelligence, 3, the sufficient time for full-time dedication for the first 90 days, and 4, you'll be able to pay for it. Now, there's another possibility. As NEMATA grows and donations come into the school, larger donations, it's possible that a benefactor could show up to sponsor the humanities program. For instance, the benefactor could donate to the Sophianic School of Arts and Sciences a certain sum, that is to say, this is to subsidize the enrollment of 3 or 5 students in the humanities program. That would eliminate the financial issue. Then, by submitting a proposal, what is it called? A request for admission. So you would request admission to vocation 13. And you have to make a statement about your qualifications and why you want to undertake it. And if you have the freedom to undertake it, then if you're accepted, you wouldn't have to pay anything if you were sponsored by someone who had donated to NEMATA for that purpose. There's all kinds of possibilities, and I'm sure that they will mature and materialize in the future. I'm quite confident of that. But for right now, I have to make the qualification, of course, that my ability to show up for the 90-day program is not 100% certain. It depends, first of all, on someone requesting admission to the program, and then I would see what can be done. All begins with the individual. So in sum, what I'm saying to you is that this course in the humanities ultimately intends to provide a custom-designed path of learning for an individual. The mentor, namely myself, will choose what to choose as your major interests, in order to craft your own sense of the humanities. That's, in my opinion, there you have the really brilliant spin of this program, you see? So that's the way it may go. And in the meantime, I intend to develop the content and the curriculum units of this vocation progressively, step by step, as I am able to do so. Now let's proceed with the text and look into how to define the humanities, or more precisely, how to redefine them for the purposes that I'm here stating. Ezra Pound, as I noted, is going to be the mentor or overseeing mascot of this project. Now, I'd have you note that the work of Ezra Pound is vast, and one of the suggested books in the reading guide to the humanities is Guide to Culture by Ezra Pound, which he wrote, I think, around 1938. Now, in that book, as elsewhere, Pound relies strongly on what he draws from ancient Chinese philosophy and ethics, especially Confucius, or Kung Fu Tse, whom he just calls Kung for short, and other works, namely The Great Digest and The Unwobbling Pivot, along with the Analects of Confucius. Now, I have to add a caveat here. I have to emphasize that this reference, nostalgic reference, delving deeply back into the past of Chinese culture, has absolutely nothing to do with China or Chinese culture today. I have no hesitation in stating my categorical, bigoted opinion that the Chinese, as far as I can tell, are despicable. Who have no ethics, no sense of the relation to nature, and do not ever forget that China is a communist totalitarian agency. Do not ever forget that. The presence of communism right in your face is evident every time you look into what is happening in China today. This has nothing to do with China today. But Chinese philosophy and ethics in its ancient roots is something truly beautiful to behold. And Ezra Pound played a huge role in the modernist and postmodernist environment to bring the interest of the West back to the best points of ancient Chinese culture. So I underscore what he draws from Chinese philosophy and ethics. What Pound draws from it is not like what anyone else draws from it. So Pound's translations and interpretations in that genre are unique and idiosyncratic. It's a standalone production. I can relate to that. So brilliant at moments to the point of breathtaking. Now, Pound continually hammers on the theme of the love of learning, which is found in the advisements and adages of certain Chinese sages. And his own proposal for the new learning, as he called it, or the new Paiduma, was an approach undertaken single-handedly in the 20s and 30s of the 20th century to recover the humanities. So I regard Pound's approach as implicit to my approach. I build upon Pound. I stand in that tradition. And as a matter of fact, through my mentor in college, C.F. Terrell, who was a world-class Pound scholar, I stand in a direct line of transmission from Ezra Pound. Literacy is a big issue in the humanities. Literacy means to be literate. To be literate, to be knowledgeable in literature, in what is worth reading, both fictionally and non-fictionally. You develop literacy by reading, by writing, by oral expression, and by the investigation of languages. Study of the humanities is a practice of literacy, and so there is a proposed reading list, and there are other aspects of the program which rely very heavily on being literate. Now, you'll see that in the text I added a question, I presented a question. Can you fully realize humanitas without being literate? Good question. The answer is yes, but it is an answer that has to be qualified along the lines I propose in the audio intro on this page. So here you are in the audio intro, and let me make that qualification as succinctly as I possibly can. It could be someone living in the American Northwest, which is called Arcadia, you know, in Washington or Oregon, in a fairly remote situation. Could be someone living in the Appalachians, in Vermont. Someone living in the Florida Keys, in the Caribbean Islands, who is an individual not disposed to be literate. That is to say, not disposed to the love of learning that directs you to read, to discover certain authors, and to cultivate a deep appreciation of your inheritance from these specimens of the anthropine species. Could such a person who is not versed in book learning realize humanitas? Well, absolutely they could, given this condition, given these two conditions. One, their internal guidance system would have to be activated. That being so, they would receive from the external world, from nature, from encounters with animals, from the sky, the wind, the sea, the forest, the streams, the rivers, they would receive that which the Aeonic Mother provides for the nourishment of their humanity. Therefore, they would achieve a level of humanitas without learning. They would not necessarily be able to discuss Walden by Henry David Thoreau, or the Essay on Self-Reliance by Emerson, or Nietzsche, or any of the Greek philosophers who are worth reviewing, and that's not all of them by any means, the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. They would not be able to get through four lines of the cantos of Ezra Pound or anything in his rendition, his brilliant rendition of Chinese philosophy. But as long as their internal guidance system was activated in the natural way that the Aeonic Mother herself provides, they would find and realize humanitas. And the second condition is that they would have the ability to communicate and impart it to others. They would have the ability, they would be a touchstone of humanitas in their own environment, and they would have the ability to transmit humanitas to others. That's the second condition, because the quality of humanitas is not a standalone proposition. It's not something that you hold only in, by, and for yourself, but it is held through and with others, and not only for oneself, never only for oneself. You do not hold humanitas for yourself alone, ever. So there's my qualification to that point. Now I'm going to move on to the text that comes under the heading Old School Humanities. So as I come around to the second half of this introduction, I invite you to take a look at what is the conventional definition of the humanities. And there you see I've provided two excerpts, somewhat modified, from Wikipedia. One is definition of the humanities, and the other is a definition of liberal arts education, which is closely related. And you see that I've noted that I added italics to those two Wikipedia entries, which I have somewhat modified. And so I would like to quickly go over the terms in italics in order to bring you toward a more well-defined definition of the path of the humanities. Humanities are academic disciplines that study aspects of human society and culture. In the Renaissance, the term contrasted with divinity. What that means is that Renaissance humanism looked for the value of the human animal on its own terms, rather than by the terms dictated by religious dogma. And so, the question of the divinity, or anything having to do with divinity and theological issues, framing how you see humanity, was set aside in order just to see it on its own terms. And that's what's called humanism. Now, there are a lot of problems with humanism. That is something that you need to understand when you come into this study, and I would certainly dedicate a unit or two to that question, clearing up the problems of humanism, starting with the Oration on the Dignity of Man by Pico della Mirandola. So we're not looking, when you look into the humanities, you're not looking to develop a sense of humanitas in the overarching framework of any theology, and certainly not Judeo-Christian or Abrahamic theology. Humanities stands entirely independent of that. Humanities use methods that are primarily critical or speculative. Now, I would modify this. I would say, yes, the humanities use methods that are critical. Metacritique, which is a course in Nemata, is an adjunct or accessory to the humanities. You need to know how to think critically and how to critique ideas and sources in order to undertake this vocation. I would substitute the word imaginal for speculative. Imaginal. That is, not imaginative or not imaginary, but imaginal. Imaginal refers to that which genuinely, organically grows out of the power of human imagination, coupled with the power of divine imagination. Remember my standard, that is my standard, to describe and demonstrate the workings of human imagination coupled with divine imagination. So the humanities involves a deep look into how your imagination works and how to use your imagination as a tool. It is both a moral tool, an ethical tool, and a creative tool. As distinguished from the mainly empirical approaches of the natural sciences, yet unlike the sciences, the humanities has no central discipline. I totally agree. I shall indeed establish the central discipline of the humanities to be recovered and restored in the final years of Kali Yuga. And you can call me on that, and you can count on me in that respect. I'm doing it right now. Now, switching to the liberal arts. Liberal arts education, from Latin liberalis, free, and ars, art or principled practice, it's an interesting translation, principled practice, can claim to be the oldest program of higher education in Western history. Voila! Bingo! And cha, cha, cha. It has its origin in the attempt to discover first principles. Those universal principles which are the condition of the possibility of the existence of anything and everything. Okay, here's my remake of that grammatical mishmash. What comes along with establishing for you the heart and core of the humanities, the central discipline, what comes along with that, and that is my commitment, is to present in a simplific manner the guiding principles of this vocation. And the guiding principles of this vocation are going to be really easy, really user-friendly. They do not concern the condition of the possibility of the existence of anything and everything. Nope. What they concern is the condition for your self-actualization as the divine animal. To make you an exemplar of humanity, that is to say, the fully matured human individual that you are, but not only that, also the transcendent and transpersonal exemplar of the species. So, that's the goal. The goal is self-actualization, which is a term, by the way, that I do borrow from Abraham Maslow, Zenosh Alert. I'm looking at Maslow very closely in that respect. But I have to say that the hierarchy of needs of Abraham Maslow, which I have supplemented by adding 5 transcendental needs, is going to be part of the core curriculum for this vocation. Liberal arts, also known as the 7 liberal arts, are those subjects or skills that in classical antiquity were considered essential for a free person. Liberalis, meaning worthy of a free person. To know in order to take an active part in civic life, something that for ancient Greece included participating in public debate, defending oneself in court, serving on juries, and more importantly, military service. Grammar, logic, and rhetoric, the trivium, went along with arithmetic, geometry, theory of music, and astronomy, the quadrivium, to form the 7 liberal arts. Now, This is rubble. This paragraph describes the rubble of the great body of learning of classical antiquity, which was inherited and carried forward in Europe into the end of the 19th century, into the 20th century. In the 20th century, it underwent a devastating assault in World War II, but it managed to survive in humanism between the wars when Pound was writing Guide to Culture. It took another devastating blow in World War II, and all this, by the way, is an intentional and calculated attack upon the Western intellectual tradition from the Zenosh and the Zads, along with their Goyim accomplices, traitors and cowards. Restoring the humanities is part of the war. The last battle for Europa is the last battle for humanity. So, some of the elements described here, some of the factors in this rubble can be restored and need to be restored. For instance, someone who claims to be a truly responsible, liberal individual, that is to say, worthy to live as a free person in society, must be mindful of the responsibilities of living in a free society, not the rights. Forget the rights. People say, well, you have a right to free speech. I say, no, you have no right to free speech. You have a responsibility to free speech, but you don't have a right. It doesn't involve a right. Who's going to give you the right? Who gave you the right to free speech? Moses? Some Lubavitch rabbi? Some politician? Someone who wrote the Magna Carta or the Declaration of Independence? No one can give you the right to free speech, because it's not a right. It's a capacity to be exercised in a responsible way. So the trouble with liberalism today, there are many problems with liberalism, and I've been contemplating that horrible mess recently in the context of a book I might be writing. One of the problems with liberalism is that it encourages a degenerate sense of individualism. But the individual who realizes him or herself in a liberal or neoliberal progressive culture is unable to really play a responsible role in public debate or standing against the court system or serving on juries or engaging in military service. So you see, these elements in this paragraph represent the rubble of the humanities as they were defined and implemented in antiquity. From that rubble, we might be able to rescue certain elements. Liberal arts today can refer to academic subjects such as literature, philosophy, mathematics, and social and physical sciences. And liberal arts education can refer to overall studies in a liberal arts degree program. For both interpretations, the term generally refers to matters not relating to the professional, vocational, and technical curriculum. So, of course, you'll find that that distinction still holds true. The humanities, to a certain extent, appears to be set aside, obviously, from economics. Today, everyone who goes into college, many people who go into college want to get an MBE, a Master in Business Administration or in Economics. Economics, sociopolitics, media studies, all of these aspects of the modern university curriculum have overwhelmed the possibility of pursuing the humanities. And so I'm not proposing here the revival of the seven liberal arts as such. I'm merely pointing to the rubble. And you need to be aware of what the seven liberal arts were as you undertake your own custom-designed pathway to restore the humanities. This is your commitment This is a commitment that you're going to undertake. And in doing so, you would put yourself on a path of self-actualization that would qualify you to be a mentor and a responsible participant, more than a participant, a responsible leader in the social order, the community, or the tribe and nation to which you belong. Such are the end goals and ultimate goals of this vocation. Am I making myself clear? So in conclusion, you'll see that I've just noted briefly some of the basic reading for the Humanities course, some passages from Not in His Image, which I'll discuss in a unit on Nietzsche, Chinese Wisdom channeled by Ezra Pound, Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, certainly indispensable, can read it in a couple of hours. My essay, Socrates in the Last Days, written on the island of Hydra in 1991. And the special case of some of the leading ideas to be drawn from Friedrich Nietzsche, as well as The Old Wine of Ralph Waldo Emerson, which can be savored in his long essay on self-reliance. So these are the fundamental building materials, the primary building materials in the course in the humanities. And there you have it. My commitment to all of you, staff first, and guests and students who I presume, some of whom I presume will be on the staff eventually, is to hold this commitment to heart and to fulfill as much of it as possible, Goddess willing.